welcome to take three of Kermode and Mayo's take. Hello.
The Barbenheimer special.
The Barbenheimer special. Anna, you're joining me once more. And we have got so much listener correspondence. And we also have our own very strong opinions about both Barbie and Oppenheimer. I'm going to start with this very pedantic message from Luke in Vancouver. Dear Barbie and Ken, this is so much directed at Mark and Simon. I just wanted to say thank you for years of entertaining and informative shows. Alas, I must say that I cringed during this week's podcast every time that each of you said Barbieheimer. The actual word is Barbenheimer, which is the combination of two names into a new name, not simply saying one name and then tacking part of the second name onto the end, e.g. Bennifer. May seem a small point, but I know you're both sticklers for accuracy. Love the show, Luke in Vancouver, BC. Barbieheimer, Barbenheimer, it's a made-up word.
It's a made-up word, mate. Chill out. That said, I have never made that mistake, and I've always referred to it correctly as Barbenheimer. Do I have a t-shirt on its way? Yes, I do. I do have a Barbenheimer t-shirt on the way.
Of course you do. Of course.
However,
you do.
I do have a follow-up question to that.
Yeah.
How would you feel if someone corrected a pronunciation of a made-up word for you?
It depends how badly I pronounced it. It's like if we were to combine the two of our names, it would be either Rihanna...
Literally.
Which is literally my
it's
name.
Very simple. You would absorb me into
yes,
you.
Exactly. Like a blob.
A pink blob.
A pink blob.
A sparkly pink blob.
Or Annery, which almost sounds like something that you'd put
sounds
up your
like
bottom.
A brand.
Oh, okay. Wow, we went different.
Yeah, we really did went different. It's the beanie bubble all over again. It's the bottom bubble.
I'm going to move on to this next email. Dear Ken and the Gadget, I would like to take a moment to urge caution before booking the Barbenheimer Bombi double bill. What do you feel about Bombi?
No, it's OP.
Don't like Bombi.
Or the OP double bill.
While both films are excellent in very different ways, we regretted seeing them so close together. Barbie is, on the surface, a fun, brightly covered romp with amusing corporate satire, but the social commentary cuts hard. Oppenheimer is naturally a work of art, but leaves one reeling with various implications. Adding the two together, not to mention the five-hour combined runtime, makes for a very heavy day. There is such a thing as existentialism by proxy, and I believe, in our hubris, we now have a crisis of it. For the best viewing experience, give these films room to breathe and yourself time to recover. On the other hand, perhaps we simply watch them in the wrong order. All the usual outros, knocking and boosting the usual suspects, Robert and Louise. I would like to say I saw these on separate days.
Me too.
And I really appreciated that I did, because you're right. And I think especially for critics, we are coming at it from a slightly different angle, because we do need to absorb and think and kind of really work out how we feel. Mm-hmm. And if you do go and see these back to back, it is, excuse the pun, an explosion of the senses. And I would have found that incredibly difficult to really drill down into specific moments. It would have been too overwhelming, I think, to then go and talk about them separately.
Might you even say it is a bombastic experience?
Oh, Anna. I wouldn't, but you sure did.
I agree with you. And I think we saw them at the same screenings, yeah, it turns out. We just didn't see each other.
Yeah, which I'm really sad about.
But the cultural phenomenon of Barbenheimer aside, which is really interesting in a myriad of ways, in a box office way, in a merchandising and marketing kind of way, in a corporate way, there's the phenomenon of it all, of even the double billing of it, it is very intense. And I have not seen them back to back yet. And I mention yet because I would like to experience seeing them back to back. I do think, and again, I agree, we're coming at it from, you know, we're lucky that we get early access to films. So we saw them before the opening weekend. I would like to do the experience at least once. Mm-hmm. I think personally, I would go Oppenheimer first and then Barbie.
Yeah.
Because I think one of them will spun you into an existential crisis of a very different kind, but you can alleviate that with a bit of pink colored booze when you go in to see Barbie afterwards and come out smiling instead of depressed.
Yeah, I think that's a really fair point. And I still came out of Barbie really laughing and on such a high, genuinely. I think I was incredibly excited about it. And, you know, to quote the email from earlier, I did go in my, locked in my pink outfit to Barbie. I bought blazer specifically for it, but also because I really love a pink blazer.
Oh,
I have several.
I've been on the lookout for years for the perfect pink power suit. Yes. And I have not yet found
it. No, I've never found the trousers, ever.
I have found the trousers. So I went in my very neon pink, very Barbie core pink, high-waisted pleated trousers.
Beautiful.
Yes.
We should have combined.
We should have, yeah. And I also wore a band t-shirt that just so happened to have the same tone of pink on it.
You're so cool, Anna. I can't bear it. But I think this is the point, right? That when I was younger, I was really put off the colour pink and all things girly. And I was so desperate to be a tomboy. It was like sort of this rejection of being female because it was so seen to be uncool.
It was seen to be superficial and silly. Yes. And if you are an intelligent woman or like an intelligent teenager and you think that, well, I cannot be perceived as very feminine or be into girly girl stuff because that by instinct is shallow and stupid, which is not.
Of course it isn't. But this is, it's all about these conceptions of what we're supposed to be as women and all of these rules that are put upon us, which is exactly what the film is about. And I think there is, you know, there's a really iconic bit in Barbie where America Ferrera's character really goes off on one, and I mean goes off on one, about all of those things that women are expected to do and all of the stupid rules and all of the, everything is so contradictory about supposed things to be, you're supposed to be intelligent, but not too intelligent. And everything has got a limitation or a marker on it. And I found that just, I found it incredibly cathartic listening to this. And I very much understand that Barbie is predominantly preaching to the converted. And that is absolutely fine. Yeah, it's all part of the echo chamber. Also fine. We are not children. This is not a film that is aimed at children. And so the idea that this is sort of supposed to be shaping feminism in any particular way, I think is kind of silly because people who are going to see this film already have a very clear idea, I think, often of their identity. Mm-hmm. And I don't feel like because it's you know, we know who we are, you know, for a millennial generation, we know what we feel about feminism. We don't think it's a dirty word. We embrace it, etc. So it's not trying to say to children, it's okay to be strong and also like dolls. That's not what this film is.
No, I think one of the interesting things, and I'll caveat this with saying I've noticed and been tagged in quite a few things, like bookshops and things like that, that have been doing their own Barbenheimer selections.
Fun.
And some readers have reached out saying that they were reading the book after reading my book, Unlikable Female Characters, either after or before
Such
seeing Barbie.
Book. Yeah.
You very kindly gave me a blurb.
I know, I saw it in the book. It was very cool to see that written down as well. I was like, I agree with everything this person. Oh, it's me.
But there is this contradictory element to feminism, to kind of high femme cinema, and also to Barbie that Barbie addresses directly. You know, it is a doll. And I think Greta Gerwig has said it even in the interview with Simon last week. Mm-hmm. Of this is a film that people who love Barbie will want to see and people who hate Barbie will want to see. And it's on the poster. And I think it quite smartly tries to wrestle with this idea of how can you have this very intense speech about the contradictions of being a woman, about the contradictions of being a woman just trying to exist, mm-hmm. about the contradictions that we place on one another when you are making a film about a really stereotypical toy that has been marketed and that has created and contributed to this image of, oh, this is what women should be like, but also not be this other way, mm-hmm. and those two things impossibly coexisting with one another. Yeah. You know, I think the film, just by the nature of where it sits as a Mattel production, mm-hmm. as being done with the permission, mm-hmm. with the support of the company, is constantly in and of itself, and in the way that everyone's been promoting it, is trying to wrestle with that. It's like, yeah, we know we've made a movie about a doll. We know that people have been using Barbies as a way to stifle different kinds of femininity. Mm-hmm. And we're going to address that in the movie making itself, in the text itself. I don't think Greta or Margot Robbie or anyone else involved in the film is unaware of that.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And that's part of the brilliance of it, is that it is very aware of his own contradictions to the point that it directly addresses them in the voiceover with Helen Mirren, you know, making a statement about the fact that if you wanted to have a Barbie that then sort of gets like more degraded or, you know, gets cellulite or, you know, the awful.
Or the fact thing that they discontinued Midge because seeing a pregnant doll is just too weird.
Then, you know, don't cast Margot Robbie. And, you know, it's very much trying to have its cake and eat it. Of course it is. And it is very aware of that as well. I think some of my issues with the film kind of are around Mattel, more to do with the sort of Will Ferrell storyline. Mm. And a friend of mine messaged me about this, and Mike also said this about like the sort of SNL skit feel of it. Mm-hmm. And that does feel very disjointed when they go into the real world and then you have this boardroom and it doesn't really make sense. I didn't enjoy that. I feel Will Ferrell, his casting in the Lego movie was so pitch perfect, and then they just tried to recreate that. And I felt like there are enough comparisons being drawn without you also doing that. And I felt it was unnecessary.
That's really interesting, because I felt that that was drawing a lot more on the kind of hyper reality of something like Josie and the Pussycats, which I know Mark brought up in his review last week, which I was really grateful for, because it's, you know, the greatest movie ever made. But it also kind of lives in that sense of, we are the very evil corporation. It's all white men in gray suits in a pink room, and we're making decisions about what women should buy. Yeah. You know, that is the joke. Yeah. And I think Will Ferrell is one of the few performers, although I did really love Jamie Demetrio as his sidekick.
Also, Jamie Demetrio and Natasha Demetrio, like, completely storming it with Barbie and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
I love it. Isn't power it siblings.
I love it.
But yeah, I love the kind of the hyper reality of the real world as well, where everything is kind of terrible and the executives are comically inept and comically blind about what it is that they're doing. It feels in tune with the movie, because none of it, even the real world, is not set in the real world.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I think that everything about this film, the superficiality of it, is so enhanced and so over-stylized, and the acting is so obvious and ridiculous. And I think that's something that, because we rarely see that level of it being so in your face, over-stylized, that really adds to the escapism of this film and the enjoyment. And I think this is where that line of like taking it very seriously, because it's so not taking itself seriously, that I kind of struggle to see where people who do take it very seriously are coming from. Of course, I understand why it's divisive. Of course, I understand why people might not like it. I do. And I kind of understand all of the criticisms around it. I just don't sit there myself. We have so many more emails. Dear presenter Barbie and contributor Barbie, I'm a first-time emailer, but a long-term listener. I feel compelled to put fingers to keyboard, having jumped on the Barbenheimer bandwagon at our local picture house this weekend. What myself and the good lady design manager, her indoors, hadn't... hadn't taken into account was that both films are basically about the same thing. Mm-hmm. During our between film noodle excursion, we've discussed Oppenheimer with a particular focus on Lewis Strauss and how his fragile ego and some perceived slights had driven him to destroy Oppenheimer's reputation. This led us into a larger discussion about men being in charge and how the entire subsequent arms race between the East and the West felt like a big lot of minds bigger than yours, willy waving. Or mini Cornichon waving, if you will. After lunch, we sat down for Barbie. Turns out this film has its own Lewis Strauss in the shape of Beach Ken. All he does is beach. Who, without wanting to be too specific or spoilery, lets his insecurities and perceived treatment drive him to make some increasingly poor choices. Suffice to say that we, and myself in particular, finished our double bill ruminating on the failings of men, a lesson with which Barbie slaps you in the face and Oppenheimer delivers with a slow but threatening rumble. Anyway, hello to Jason, tinkety-tonk, and down with all stupid men in all situations. Dan Robinson.
I mean, I think... that both the films are basically about the same thing is actually incredibly accurate.
Yeah.
Because let's look at it on balance, right? Mm-hmm. Oppenheimer is about an extremely influential historical figure who has had massive repercussions on the world as we know it. Barbie is a film about a really influential historical figure who has had massive influence and repercussions on the world as we know it.
Brilliant.
It's literally the same thing. Yeah. Both are directed by highly acclaimed Oscar-winning filmmakers. both are starring award-winning, really exemplary actors, some of the brightest of their generations. Great.
And also the color scale decisions.
Both use color in order to indicate as a narrative storytelling choice. Exactly. Tick, 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 tick.
Exactly. And although I suppose you don't have the flash forward, flashback in Barbie, you do have these different worlds, which we kind of...
You do have some flashbacks in Barbie.
Do we?
Yeah. You have some flashbacks to America Ferrera playing...
Oh, you're so right. You're so right. Oh my God. Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, so you're all for this particular comparison?
I'm all for it. I do think Louis Strauss, who's played by Robert Downey Jr. in Oppenheimer, that relationship, his relationship with Oppenheimer in the film is quite interesting. And I've heard Nolan speak about it as sort of his intention being to create a sort of Amadeus, a Mozart versus Salieri kind of obsession of Strauss as a non-physicist who perhaps would have been a physicist in a different life, being slighted by this genuine scientist, much more kind of accomplished in the science and respected in the scientific world, and then that coming back to bite him when he was rising up in the political world. It's a bit simplistic. I found that really simplistic. And that actually, that kind of intellectual battle and the belittlement or the perceived belittlement of Strauss by Oppenheimer, without Oppenheimer ever kind of really necessarily intending to, but also not really giving a damn, because he's not a hero. He's not a likable figure.
No.
He is very egocentric and very full of himself. Yeah, one of the greatest minds of his generation, but also one whose ego and ambition probably blinded him. And I'm going strictly off of what we're seeing in the film, because much too complicated a story and a figure to really discuss in 16 minutes. But yeah, I thought that perhaps could do with more room to breathe. It was a bit too slight to just paint Strauss as the one-sided, you know, willy-waving villain, even though please don't make me say the word willy again, and to play kind of Oppenheimer as a martyr of himself. I thought that was a bit too simplified.
I think that's fair. I think it's interesting that they chose also to sort of open the film with the idea of him poisoning his teacher and then sort of going back on it a little bit. And then we never really quite revisit that element of his psyche. And I think that's quite an important thing to have just dropped in there. And then what happened, you know, what about that really dark side of himself that was kind of quite up for killing somebody just because they pissed them off? And yet he is so kind of torn apart, supposedly, by his decisions with the bomb. And you come away from it thinking, how rarely do we see in Western cinema the perspectives of the people who either lost their lives or whose relatives lost their lives in Hiroshima? And I found that was something that I came away from wishing that there was that other side to go to.
That's quite interesting, because I've read a couple of reviews that have pointed that out, and it's actually something that I, you know, will land on Oppenheimer's side with and say, like, that's not this film.
Oh, it isn't, but it made me want to go and see the other film then, the flip side film. And where is that film from a West, you know, like we're so not interested in that perspective, I suppose. You're right, it's not this film. I don't think it should be, and I think it would have been inauthentic for Nolan to attempt to portray that, because I don't think he would have done it well.
I do think it is a very deliberate and quite a fascinating choice to avoid kind of any us seeing or experiencing or being reminded of the real life implications, because we see the Trinity test. So that's the test that they conducted before the actual bomb was dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. But we never actually see the real bomb. We never actually see the devastation that it caused for decades to come, because that was not their job. Their job was done. And it was taken away from them. The literal bomb was taken away from them as soon as they completed the building of it. And I will say there was, you know, this is more, I've gone down several, many, many hours of rabbit holes down this.
Yeah.
I will say there's a potential really interesting movie to be made about the televised encounter between the pilot who dropped the bomb on Hiroshima and one of the victims who then emigrated to the US.
Wow.
That actually happened.
Okay.
And that is, I mean, those TV producers, absolutely demonic choices were being made. But that,
where can you see that? Where did you see that?
I read about it and I heard about it on a podcast about the Manhattan Project, which is the project that developed the bomb that Oppenheimer was spearheading, in advance and again after seeing the film. And I have not sought out the actual footage, because I think that would be a bit too upsetting at the moment.
Yeah,
but I do believe it is out there. It was televised.
It's fascinating. We have an email from Tim Hall from Oxfordshire saying, "Dear Dr. Robert Oppenheimer and Rich Lady Who's Crying, just returned from doing Barbageddon at the excellent Phoenix Picture House in Oxford. Oppenheimer first, a taut film which probably didn't need to be 3 hours, but can be forgiven because it didn't feel like it. The tension didn't come from the wait for the testing of the device. Spoiler, it worked. but from the scientific and political ramifications. As I imagined Mark saying, it's not about a bomb. Instead, it's about men and their motivation. Second course, Barbie, which was an hour shorter, much pinker, and massively entertaining. Also, I came away not just entertained, but thinking that this is a film with a strong message about the patriarchy. Hashtag not all Ken. And far more heart in its exploration of the motivations of humanity than Oppenheimer. Thank you, Tim. Yeah, men and their motivations and their, the sort of oversimplification about it being about the male ego, I can completely get on board with. But of course, that is a huge part of it. And the fact that we see so few women in the film, very deliberately, of course, because they, you know, misogyny was very real and alive in the 50s as well.
Well, actually, there was quite a few women scientists working on the Manhattan Project.
Nolan, what the f***?
So can we do a short little aside, because this has been one of the big gripes with Oppenheimer from many critics. And I've been thinking about this a lot because on the one hand, the portrayal of women in Nolan's films has not always been, you know, substantial. But I think Florence Pugh and Emily Blunt's roles as Jean Tatlock, one of his first kind of lovers and occasional mistress after he got married to Kitty Oppenheimer, played by Emily Blunt. Blunt and Pugh, two of the best performers of their generation, are given crumbs.
Yeah.
Literally almost nothing to do here. I'm very much playing into the stereotypes of the nagging shrew wife. And
terrible mother, alcoholic, we're supposed to hate her.
Yeah, and the crazy mistress.
Yeah.
Right? Crazy, sexy mistress. There is, however, something, and I'm not using this as an excuse, but I have been thinking about this a lot. Is it fair, perhaps, that this is, because it is portrayed all from Oppenheimer's point of view, and that is delineated through the use of color and aspect ratio? You know, when we see stuff in color, we're in Oppenheimer's mind. When we see stuff in black and white, we're seeing him as other people see him, you know, notably as Strauss sees him. Is it then, again, not an excuse, but a choice to show both Kitty and Jean as these really reductive characters, are very peripheral to his life and definitely peripheral to his thinking and his work, big man's work, as an artistic choice, that this is the way that he would have seen these really deeply accomplished women that were very important in his life. Kitty, you know, his life partner for decades, as being just the crazy, sexy one and the nagging, alcoholic one.
I think that's an absolutely astute way of looking at this. I think if Nolan had history of writing incredible roles for women in his other films, then, you know, it would be much more easy to forgive that and see it from that perspective. I just think he doesn't know how to write women and
can't. He doesn't.
If you look back at pretty much everything he's ever done, it's so much about the male being at the front and center, the ego, the id, whatever you want to call it. And look, he is an incredible filmmaker. And I have to say, this is probably, Oppenheimer was one of my favorites of his.
I agree. I think, not expecting it.
No, and I could not believe that even after 3 hours of watching men talk in boardrooms, that I had not had enough. I would have happily sat through another few hours, I think, of it. I am somebody who has a very small bladder and I constantly need to go to the toilet. I mention this quite a lot because I think it's quite important for fellow small bladder sufferers because it does interrupt the flow of the movie, so to speak. And actually, I didn't need to go once. I was gripped. I didn't lose attention once. There was nothing about this that didn't compel me to keep watching. So I have to say that with all the, you know, I think it's important to, you know, critique it properly, but I have to say it is a phenomenal movie. And I think Cillian Murphy obviously does so much of the heavy lifting of that. Just his eyes alone, the fact that when he smiles in certain scenes, you know he's not really smiling. And when he does smile properly, you realise it, you notice it.
Yeah.
And I've kind of talked about this before, about like his inflection, his cadence, the way that he talks. It kind of shifts with depending on who he's talking to. And you know how some people are kind of like, I don't know, audio chameleons, and they will slightly change their accent, or, you know, it's kind of like almost like coded to kind of fit in with whoever they're talking to. And I feel like he did that in this movie. And it wasn't that he couldn't get the accent. It was that he was just very subtly shifting it depending on the person that he was with.
That's so beautifully put.
I loved it.
And do you know what? I just love project management.
Not what I thought you were going to say.
I love seeing a project work out well and to schedule and to budget. And Oppenheimer is a testament to teamwork and solid project management.
Excellent, excellent takeaway. We've got this great email from Millie, which I just wanted to say, because we had another email in take one, and I sort of feel like this is maybe the antithesis to that. Mm-hmm. So, dear Barbie and Ken, I'm a female machine learning engineer currently building cars which drive themselves. I am also blonde.
What a movie about you, Millie.
Yeah, right? Forever, I have hated Barbie and the idea of the bimbo mm-hmm. for all it has cost me and people like me who want to be taken seriously at what they do. In fact, one of the main reasons I didn't pursue a PhD was because I couldn't find a single blonde female researcher in the dozens of AI labs I looked at. AI lab?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Of AI labs that I looked at and realised this was not a place for people who look like me. Barbie deserves some of the blame for that. However, my partner and I just finished our marathon of Oppenheimer. We watched it that way around. Yep. And from the first 30 seconds, I found myself welling up. For approximately 1 hour and 40 minutes, I was transported to a world I never thought I would get to experience. One where women are genuinely empowered. One where roles are reversed and the glass ceiling is not just shattered, but was never there. When it came to covering how it's to be a woman, this movie did not miss a beat. My partner and I laughed the whole way through, and though we both agreed the plot was at times tenuous, I will always remain grateful for my time in the Barbie world and urge anyone and everyone to watch this movie. When I interview for jobs, I always tie my hair in a tight bun, a disguise, if you will. It's the best I can do to hide my bit of Barbie. I think I'll wear it down from now on.
That's so cute.
That is so sweet.
Wonderful.
How's your game at Tivol? Tinkety tonk and all the rest from the no, AI is not going to take over the world. It's really not that smart corner Correct. Of the church. Millie, thanks,
Thank
Millie.
You,
That's
Millie.
Actually really, really yeah. important to hear. Okay, you've genuinely made me tear up because it's just so frustrating, the idea that a toy that has this much kind of resonance can make a woman who is clearly so intelligent and has the power to make some real change in the world feel that she doesn't belong anywhere. So for all that Mattel kind of argue that they have astronauts and presidents and all the rest of it who are Barbies, actually that doesn't quite translate to the real world as Barbie kind of makes that point. So thank you so much for getting in touch, Millie.
Thank you, Millie. And you know what? You wear your hair exactly the way you want to.
Thank you, all of you who've been in touch with your Oppenheimer, Barbie, Bombi,
Oppenheimer.
I don't even know anymore, but thank you. And Anna, thank you again for joining me to talk all about your Barbenheimer opinions, because they are the best.
Thank you, Rihanna. This is always a pleasure to do anything with you. On mic or off mic.
You always make me reframe how I think about things. And I don't necessarily always agree, but you always make me think. And I love that. I love that for me and I love that for us.
Thank you so much for the show as well, for letting us go long on Barbenheimer, the movies, and Millie and all the other listeners who have written in.
We appreciate you, in the words of Ted Lasso, which is naff, by the way. thank you. And we will see you next week. That's all for take 3.